This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
We have, from the very early days, felt like we had the opportunity to be a role model of sustainable business practices. So both referring to both environmental sustainability and how we set up our democratic culture, our high involvement culture.
Today on Sea Change Radio, we're talking about green beer, and it's not even St. Patrick's Day. First, we talk with Jennifer Vervier, the director of sustainability for New Belgium Brewing Company. In a plot twist straight out of a Laverne and Shirley episode, Vervier worked her way up from the bottling line to head of sustainability in a brewery now known as one of the most ecological in the country. Recognized for its tasty Fat Tire Amber Ale and other original craft-style brews, New Belgium is a female-dominated company in a male-dominated industry. Then we revisit my discussion with the founder of Alaskan Brewing Company, Jeff Larson, as we talk about the challenges his Juneau, Alaska-based company faces in keeping a tiny carbon footprint despite sizable transportation costs. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Jennifer Vervier. She's the Director of Strategy and Sustainability at New Belgium Brewing. Jen, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thanks, Alex.
So you've been with New Belgium for almost two decades and had an interesting route to get to the current position as head of strategy and sustainability of the company. Why don't you first tell us a little bit about New Belgium and your own history with the company?
Sure. So New Belgium was founded in 1991 in our co-founder's basement, and they had the inspiration to be the first craft brewery to sell Belgian-style ales in the U.S. And I came onto the company in 1993. I was getting my master's in environmental ethics at CSU, and I started working part-time on the bottling line. And from there, I started doing some office work as well, took some accounting classes, became the financial manager, eventually got my MBA in finance and became the CFO. Did that for a few years, and then tried my hand at chief operating officer for a few years, and then was again casting about for a change, and we created this executive level position in sustainability and had tied in sort of strategic development around growing the business beyond our core beer business.
And you're just for listeners around the country who may not be familiar with the New Belgium beer brand, they may be more familiar with Fat Tire.
Correct. Yes. Fat Tire has been our flagship the whole way through. But they might be familiar with Ranger or Slow Ride or Abbey or Triple.
And how many states is your product available in now?
We are in 38 states right now. And Canada and Sweden. Yeah.
Oh, and Sweden, huh?
A little bit, yeah.
And you're based out of Fort Collins, Colorado. You had mentioned CSU. That's Colorado State University. So isn't CSU based in Fort Collins as well?
That's correct, yep. So we have always made all of our beer in Fort Collins, Colorado, but right now we're very close to finishing up our second brewery in Asheville, North Carolina. And we should be brewing beer out of there by the end of this year. And then that brewery will be able to ship beer to the rest of the East Coast that we're currently not able to serve.
And that's similar to Sierra Nevada's strategy. Haven't they also opened up an East Coast brewery in North Carolina recently?
They did, yep, in Mills River, North Carolina, yep.
So this is a strategy to kind of cut down on distribution costs?
Exactly. When we looked at it, we started this project in 2010 to build a second brewery. It was in the beginning, it was all about where could we locate that would do exactly that, cut down transportation miles once we would become a national brand.
I would imagine that the biggest variables that you take into account when trying to reduce your carbon footprint and become a sustainable brewer is amount of water and amount of electricity and other power sources. Why don't you give us an overview of some of the ways that New Belgium has differentiated itself from other brewers in that sense?
So when, you know, we look at our footprint, we look at across the entire life cycle of our products. So we're looking in the supply chain at the beginning, you know, how the barley is grown and the hops and bottles are made. And when we did a life cycle carbon footprint for a six pack of Fat Tire a few years ago, we found out that our operations were somewhat of a small part of the total impact compared to glass and transportation and refrigeration at retail. So what we try and do is work up and down the supply chain. And then operations, like you mentioned, you have, you know, obviously natural gas to create the wort, and then a bunch of electricity to cool the beer during fermentation, and a ton of water. And we're in the arid west, as you know, so that's one of our most important issues is water use. And then renewable energy, energy efficiency, in-process metering to optimize operations to use the right amount of energy, on-site water treatment from which we capture the methane that's created by an anaerobic digester, and we store that methane and then burn it in a combined heat and power engine that offsets our peak loads every day. So to reduce our electricity use and also reduce our natural gas use because we capture the heat from the engine. And then, you know, you're going out the other end, you're shipping the beer, and we try to be really active in the industry around improving recycling rates and collection, because that'll make all of our packages more sustainable. The second brewery in Asheville is going to help with shipping miles. And then we kind of go the next step, and we look at philanthropy and political advocacy to help better create the conditions by which we can all have more sustainable operations.
Speaking of social issues, New Belgium has a lot of high-ranking women in its management team. How have you seen change in the brewing industry since you've come aboard in terms of this inherent sexism?
Honestly, Alex, we were largely unconscious of it. Our co-founder and our longtime CEO is Kim Jordan, and she's always just looked for the best people for the job. And I think she's actually been pretty gender blind, and it's just so happened, as you said, that we've gotten a lot of women in top management positions. And then you take that for granted, and then you go to the Craft Brewers Conference or you go to distributor meetings and you realize, oh, you know, we're the only women in the room. But as far as in craft brewing itself, more just every single year we see more and more women at the Craft Brewers Conference. So I think that's changing. Women are passionate about craft beer and they're great brewers, and they're great in management. So I think that while we may think of brewing, broad brush as being male dominated, I don't think that's true of craft brewing.
So let's break down some of the variables that you discussed earlier. Let's talk about water. One of the holy grails for the larger brewers I've read is trying to get the ratio of water used per barrel of beer from like 5 to 1. You've gone well beyond that. Why don't you talk about some of the ways that you've been able to kind of reduce the amount of water you use in your process?
Sure. So yeah, you're referring to the water use ratio, and that is the standard metric in the industry where you say, how many gallons of water does it take to produce, you know, X gallons of beer? And a lot of the data says that for a long time, that's been about 5 to 1. So 5 gallons of water for a gallon of beer. And our goal is to get down to 3.5 to one, because when we look at what's possible, like, one unit's always going to go out in the product, and then you have cleaning and just evaporation and transpiration through heating and cooling. Our goal is 3.5. And some of the things that we've done, like very early on, we were fortunate to have an electrical engineer as a co-founder who really understood where to find efficiencies. And so we hard piped our brewery as soon as it was, you know, at all economically feasible. So you don't have hoses lying on the ground, you don't have hoses left on. And that simple step, I think, brought us into a really nice place very early on. And then subsequently, you know, the gains get harder to find. But I mentioned earlier in-process metering. So you're looking at each CIP or each pasteurizer run.
I'm sorry, what's a CIP?
Oh, I'm sorry, clean in place. So each run of chemicals and water through your pipes and your equipment to clean them in between batches. So that's all automated, and then you're looking at how much water is used during each process step in order to minimize that use and also to see if things have gone wrong, like anomalies are being called out right away. Another practice that we instituted very early on, which I believe has become much more common, is to have a stack condenser on our kettle so that steam is captured and then condensed, so made back into water, and then stored as hot water in the brewery, so in a hot, what's called a hot liquor tank, and the beginning of the next brew uses this water that's already hot from the prior brew. So you're not starting from, city temperature water every time you start a brew. So that saves heat, and then that captures that steam that otherwise would have been lost to the air.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8,
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Jennifer Vervier. She's the Director of Strategy and Sustainability at New Belgium Brewing in Fort Collins, Colorado. So, Jen, when you're talking about sustainability and brewing in the craft space, the craft beer space, I imagine it's a friendlier competitive landscape than the bottom line of stocking the shelves and selling your beer. What kind of lessons have you learned from other brewers and vice versa? And do you guys exchange trade secrets? When you're talking about water usage, for example, I noticed that Full Sail Brewing out of Hood River claims that they've reduced their consumption to 2.5 gallons per gallon of beer.
Well, I don't know for an actual fact how they've done that, but I would assume that some of that has to come from water reuse in the process. So taking water out of the back end, cleaning it and bringing it back in through CIPs or into the boiler. And we are actually looking at that. It is challenging with water law in Colorado. That's not just not a given, with issues around return flows and single use water rights. So it varies across the country what you're able to do. But to your question about the collegiality of craft brewers, that is absolutely true. Like on the, you know, the QA side and the brewing side and the engineering side, there's a lot of best practice sharing where you're not competing like you are out in the marketplace. So we are proud of the role that we've played in helping the Brewers Association, which is the craft beer trade association, set up a sustainability committee that is creating programming throughout the year for craft brewers. We're doing energy and water benchmarking of craft brewers so folks can better understand what's normal. You know, they can't compare themselves to Sierra Nevada or New Belgium all the time because we're in different scales. But if we can collect the data for breweries that are more similar to their size, then they know what goals to shoot for and can reach out to those folks who are best in class, operating in the same kind of sphere that they are.
And on the power generation side of things, how has New Belgium made strides from when you first began at the company 19 years ago, Jen?
For a very long time, starting in the late 90s, we subscribed to our city's wind power program. And so we felt that when we looked at what the options were as far as efficiency and renewables were, we felt that was the best use of our money to get more renewables onto the grid. And so we paid extra per kilowatt hour to do that.
Probably a significant amount, I imagine, back then.
Yes, it was a significant amount. And especially because, for better and for worse, energy is so cheap out here. So then over time we have put on 300 kilowatts of solar photovoltaic panels to get more renewable energy on site. We have started what we call an internal energy tax, where we actually, you know, quote unquote, tax ourselves for each kilowatt hour and megatherm that we use, and collect that in a pool up for capital funds or process improvement funds that is just about energy efficiency and renewable energy. So, you know, our team is always looking at, we do a lot of capacity expansion projects, as a lot, it seems like most breweries are. And so every time that you're adding new equipment, you have that opportunity to make it more efficient, you know, to choose a more efficient choice. And that's really a part of what we do. It's not as perhaps as glamorous as a, you know, a PV array, but it's the real day in and day out work of making your brewery efficient.
And why do you think that breweries have taken the reins of trying to be on the cutting edge of renewable power generation from a manufacturer standpoint? When you go into your refrigerator and you look at different products, most of them aren't saying solar powered or wind powered, but you get a craft beer and it's not uncommon to see something like that.
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's one that we, you know, ponder ourselves. But is it, and so I can only speculate, is it that people who are attracted to this career are folks who just really naturally, they care about what they put into their bodies, they care about what they make, they care about their communities. And from that naturally comes caring about our natural environment and you know, wanting to make a transition to cleaner fuels. I think that's kind of the best theory that I have, that the folks who get into craft brewing are pretty thoughtful people and pretty vested in their community and in the planet.
Maybe there's also some competition within that space where you're trying to market to an eco-conscious consumer who would maybe make a consumer choice based on the carbon footprint of the product.
Yeah, and that would be great. I mean, the more consumers that we have that make those kinds of choices, the faster, you know, the more that companies are going to see it to be worthwhile, and the faster we're going to move in that direction. So I hope that's the reason.
It's uncommon at larger companies, over 50 employees, to have like a chief sustainability officer who's not coming from the sustainability world as much as coming from inside the company. Why don't you talk about some of the challenges that your route has presented for you and some of the advantages as well, Jen?
Sure. Well, on the advantage side, I mean, I think it's apparent that because I have really understood both the business model of the brewery and then the operating model of the brewery, like, you know, I just know the company inside and out, so I can speak to finance and accounting professionals, I can speak to engineers and help us all come together to find the best solutions that, you know, that work across the board. And I think it's really great that there are so many people putting green elements onto their MBAs, their business degrees or their marketing degrees, because I think that's just got to help us. But I'm often asked by students, you know, tell me about your career path. How did you get to where you are? And I, you know, I'm happy to talk about it, but I have to say it's probably not that replicable. You know, I was just so fortunate to have started on the ground floor of what has become, you know, one of the greatest companies in the craft brewing industry. I think one of the United States, you know, role model companies. So it's certainly a path that worked for me. Many of us in New Belgium executive management have been there for, you know, 20 years or more, and we grew up with the business.
As a manager at New Belgium Brewing Company, which is a sizable company, you have over 650 employees there. What kind of model are you trying to create for other businesses?
We have, from the very early days, felt like we had the opportunity to be a role model of sustainable business practices. So both referring to both environmental sustainability and how we set up our democratic culture, our high involvement culture. We love craft beer. We love the craft brewing industry. And at the same time, we understand that, you know, people spend most of their waking lives at work. And, you know, they spend, you build a career and it has to be really meaningful, like that you're doing something important besides making and selling, albeit a great product. So we have tried to create an environment where people can bring their whole selves to work, where the company's values are aligned with their values. And, you know, every day what we do is helping make the world a little better place.
Jennifer Verviers, the Director of Strategy and Sustainability at New Belgium Brewing. Jen, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks a lot, Alex. It was great.
And I woke up in the morning, I got myself a-
Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidio.edu.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
Next on Sea Change Radio, we hear from Jeff Larson, the co-founder of Alaskan Brewing Company. Jeff, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Alex, thanks for having me on the air.
Although Alaskan Brewing Company beer is not available in every U.S. state, the brand has grown quite a bit and has been around for several decades. Can you give us a brief overview of the company, Jeff?
Sure. Alex, we started in 1986, and back then there were around 67 breweries in the United States. Now there's 2,700 and growing. And that was 27 years ago. And we had kind of this novel idea back then of starting a small brewery focused on flavor here in Alaska, where it was kind of a maybe some of the back eddies of the beer world. We didn't get necessarily the freshest products sent to Alaska. But actually, I think when you think about the lifestyle and nature of people, we definitely enjoy where we are, what we do. And so when we started, it really hit, a chord with the locals.
One of the main challenges I can imagine as your beer has become more widely distributed is keeping transportation costs down from Juneau, Alaska. Can you give us an idea of the arc of your efforts to become a more sustainable brewer, Jeff?
I love the term that you just used, arc, the arc of that, because our shipping is via water. Juneau is a landlocked community. You can only get here by air or by sea. The problem with ocean travel is time. It takes time. But the advantage of ocean travel is it's the most efficient way of transporting goods over miles of distance.
And especially heavy goods, I would imagine.
Heavy goods. And actually, of course, most of what we produce is liquid, which is from the water of Southeast Alaska, which is the largest temperate rainforest in North America. So water we've got plenty of. But the other raw materials we have shipped in, and they come in on barge. And I'd have to say that, you know, that's one thing about our location is you're mindful of everything you see around you. I mean, that's one reason why I'd say most of us live in Alaska. We choose to live here. We're given every opportunity to leave. we, you know, tend to go through Seattle, Washington to go visit friends and family. But Alaska has such a broad appeal to so many people. It truly is a frontier mindset. And I think in that sense, the need for innovation is prevalent in everything we do. And that innovation comes in many forms. I mean, truly, we leave friends and family behind, and so we're innovative in trying to meet new friends and family. We make our own. I think also that kind of transfers over into our approach to brewing. We have a lot of challenges in Alaska, you know, and I'd say every brewery has their challenges. But for us, it, you know, the concept of being conservation-minded is inherent in the difficulty with which we have to approach making things. You know, very few wasted materials makes for a lot, you know, more efficient and less cumbersome process. So from the beginning, I think our location has kind of instilled a need to be very focused on kind of the question, why not?
So, Jeff, let's talk about some of your environmental stewardship efforts, most notably your biomass-powered steam boiling system, which makes, as you call it, beer-powered beer. Tell us a little bit more about how this works.
Well, it's an interesting process, beer making. And as with any manufacturing of a product, there's going to be certain waste streams. And one of the largest waste streams that we create is called spent grain. It's the residue after we've taken all the great stuff that becomes beer. You know, the malt, barley malt is mashed. And in that mashing process, we extract a lot of soluble flavor compounds, including sugars and complex carbohydrates that the yeast will consume ultimately to make beer. But not all of the grain gets dissolved into what becomes beer. Those residues are spent grain. It's the husk and other parts of the grain that didn't get solubilized.
And recycling this stuff has kind of been the holy grail for brewers for many years, I can imagine.
No question. You know, you have to be very mindful of your whole process, including your waste streams. The nice thing about spent grain, though, is it does have some food value. And so many of the common ways of disposing of the spent grain is by using it as feed for cattle and other types of livestock. But what we don't have here in Juneau is a lot of agriculture. And so we have been looking at using spent grain in other ways. We do dry it and send it south for the dairy farms in Washington. But what we ended up finding out is that its BTU value, its fuel value, is very high. In fact, if you talk about it, technically speaking, on a BTU basis, its highest value is as a fuel. The difficulty is that it's very high in protein. And so I always kind of use this as a kind of a pictorial analogy. It's kind of like being by a campfire and then deciding to see if you can fuel it with eggs and start throwing raw eggs into the fire. They don't burn very nice. Well, that's kind of what spent grain does. And so over the last two decades of experimenting with the spent grain, we've learned a lot about how best to use it as fuel. And so we started investigating using it as 100% fuel for a steam boiler, which has never been done before. And many people have tried, actually. People have tried, but have been unsuccessful. The main problem, of course, is it kind of tends to belch out black smoke, and it's can be pretty ugly. And so we started working with our existing knowledge base, because, like I said, we use it as a portion of our fuel for drying grain. And then we were able to install this unit. We made a 1/10 scale model before we actually pulled the trigger and put in a 9 million BTU boiler that has as its fuel 100% spent grain. And so it's a biomass boiler. And I think one thing that you know, every renewable resource has its impacts. You know, there's no silver bullet. But I think the unique thing about this for us is that here we have a waste stream that we've converted, and its value is three times that of what we would have gotten as it being sold for feed. Its value is to replace our use of fossil fuels.
He's the co-founder of Alaskan Brewing Company, Jeff Larson. Jeff, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
It's been a pleasure.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise. Additional music by Antibalas, Cindy Greco, and The Doors. Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.